Well, first of all, I apologize already to you, but sorry for last week, Tricia. Thank you guys for all of your understanding. I really appreciated that. And thanks for making the progress. This is great. And from what I was understanding from the listening to it today was that basically we're kind of attacking each concept again and try to be more specific, more detail, and also rearrange the language so that they all sound the same, because we had some that was more about the concepts and others that were more directed, you know, students should understand this. So we're trying to same type of language, which makes sense. And the other thing that I found interesting listening to the conversation today was that in the original paper that Beth and John Beth and Bob and Joan had done, they actually had four prerequisites, which was distribution variability, the normal distribution, and sampling. And we had kind of left normal distribution out, and I see that we're kind of putting it back in, which I think is a good thing to do, actually. That was all my wrapping up comments from the last time.
Good. Well, so, I suppose we can just look at where we go from here today. Pick up where we left off,
okay.
Yes. Sure.
Trying to remember where we left off.
You left off at variability.
Okay.
I think
there were a few sampling questions that weren't quite completed 100%, and you said, let's leave it here for a little bit and move on, and then you went to variability. Sorry, Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we got through at least a chunk of variability, and we still have distributional thinking to go through.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we had talked about kind of, once we've gotten it all, reviewing everything and cleaning it up a little more. You know, Michelle just brought up the idea of adding the normal distribution, perhaps, which we can talk about as well.
Okay.
Michelle, you want to kind of guide us with that?
Well, I'm just looking back at the variability question. I think one of the things that I think that we're missing somewhere in here is that we took out one of the variability ones was that students should be able to compare variability across groups. And last time we thought, well, that's maybe not clear enough. And so we changed it to different distributions may have different variability, which is bar 2 on the table that Michael just gave us. I think one thing that we're missing in here, or at least relative to several of the assessment questions that we've given, is in more than one question, we actually ask them to compare two groups, essentially comparing the mean, but taking into consideration the variability. I think there's one of the questions has to do with the pink and black group, and which class did better, where they need to look at the distribution and the variability, and but we really want them to focus on the mean of those two. And the other, I believe, was like two different classes, maybe biology and psychology or something like that, where you're trying to see whether one group did better. I can't remember what exactly the intervention was, but two of the questions that we have in assessment, we actually ask them to compare two groups. So I feel like somehow we need to get somewhere in here. I don't know, perhaps it's in our distributional thinking, something about comparing groups using both the center and the variability. I feel like that's missing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that part of the reason that we changed it to different distributions have different variabilities because we were having a hard time with the language again and making it sound like a concept instead of a task that a student should be able to complete. And so you just saying that, you know, maybe, Michelle, I wish I could rewind right now, but I think you just said it, didn't you, that you didn't say students should be able to compare based on mean and dispersion and distribution, but I think you just said straight out that, you know, the comparison of distributions depends on both the center and variability or something like that. And so maybe we could change that bar too a little bit.
Well, except that we're talking about variability here. And
I'm sorry.
I mean, I completely agree that that's an important thing that students should do. But if we're talking about the concept of variability,
right.
Then I don't think discussion of the center needs to have any play except for what we put in, the second one, variability question mark.
So talking about
deviation from the center. I would think about that more as distributional thinking.
Right, and distributional thinking too is what I meant. So we
have
that one there.
And so distributional thinking too talks about students should be able to characterize the shape, center, and spread of a distribution.
Right.
Exactly.
So when we get to
somehow I'd like to add under DT2 another one, like not only that they could characterize the shape, center, and spread of a distribution, but then use those characterizations to compare two different groups. Because it's sort of one thing for them to be able to look at it and say, oh, yeah, this is a symmetric with this mean and this standard deviation, and, oh, that one's skewed with this mean and this standard deviation. And then the higher level reasoning after that is, well, which class do you think did better? So it's kind of trying to make comparisons by taking all of that into consideration. No?
Yeah, well, I guess the question is, what do they need to know to be able to do that? If most of these things, we have points of what one actually knows rather than what they're able to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think this is just another example of the overlap in these concepts. And so if we leave it as is now with the VAR2, when we get to distributional thinking, what is number two in the table as it exists? Again, rewording it so that it's not what students can do, but it's the concepts they should know. So that DT2, if we reward that, something what Michelle said about distributions differ in terms of both shape, center, and spread of it, or something to that effect.
Right.
Or distributions are characterized by their shape, center, and spread.
But in terms of isolating the variability, I guess I am. Thank you for pointing out, Michael, back to, I don't really know how you would change what is VAR2 in our table.
Yeah.
We somehow the point of what makes greater variability, of course that's in VAR1 maybe, but it's kind of buried in there. Because what we want people to do, what information to use, is what makes variability bigger or smaller, but VAR1 actually says that in a more abstract form.
And I think you definitely do need to know what the standard deviation is, what it measures.
Yeah. And VAR1 states that, so that's good.
Yeah. VAR2, while it's true that different distributions have different variability, it's also really hard to think of. I mean, it's just extremely difficult to isolate variability because, if you're thinking of, for example, two different stocks, one has a price of $3 and the other a price of $100, and they both have the same standard deviation of $3, that means really different things, relative to their mean. So they might have the same variability, but relative to different centers makes it a different.
Yeah, that's right. That's an interesting concept that often we ignore. Like in ANOVA, you assume equal variances no matter what the means are.
Yeah, that gets us to the next level of interpretation of kind of what they mean. I mean, because I think we could argue that those do have the same amount of variability.
Yeah, they do. But in terms
but
of
absolute variability, not relative variability.
Yeah.
Right.
Which investment would give you more stability, even though they have the same standard deviation?
Does it make it, I guess, does it relax things if we were just to write that variability is one component of comparing distributions, or one, I don't know what word to put in there. But if you leave the door open saying, okay, it's not the only thing that you would use to compare distributions, but it is part of it, guess that's kind of what it says right now.
DT2 will, you know, if we say distributions are characterized by the shape, center, and spread of the distributions, we're kind of saying that. But maybe we want to emphasize that more. All three of those things are important.
Yeah.
Yeah, something about, you know, comparing two distributions involves consideration of the differences in their shape, center, and variability. And I'm not sure that's particularly useful addition. So I'm just trying to think about, you know, some of the assessment items, because eventually, you know, the goal here is eventually also, once we have all these, is to link it to assessment items or create new ones that are appropriate for testing names. And I'm just saying, you know, the questions that we have that I think are quite reasonable questions about, you know, looking which class do you think did better, the pink or the black. You know, we're really, it's a multi-level reasoning there. We're asking them to look at the mean and consider the variability at the same time.
Yeah, if they really understand the point, then it's a relatively small step to be able to get to answer those questions. But it is putting together, in some cases, more than one point. Well, should we talk about the distributional thinking a bit more? I mean, we started it a bit, and maybe there's more to say about that. The language there is different from the other ones. So we
I've been kind of refining it as we talk.
Okay, yeah. So DT2 we've got, I think, refined.
Yeah, but distributions are characterized by their shape, center, and spread.
Yeah. What about DT1?
So DT1, I'll propose distributions are typically represented graphically. Parentheses, using histograms, et cetera. We had talked about kind of focusing on histograms, but I think we want to focus on that, but not uniquely rely on it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, okay, I think that's good. You know, an issue with the histogram is that it reveals the shape. You don't need a histogram to find the mean and standard deviation, but the shape, unless it's something like normal, you really do need the histogram.
Mm-hmm.
So one could say maybe even stronger than that, histograms or graphic displays are needed to display the shape. Maybe starting with DT2 as being the first point under distributional thinking, because that's kind of the first point, and then we can talk about how you do that.
Yeah, I mostly agree with that statement. I think you can actually describe a distribution without the graphics.
If it's a nice distribution, especially. If it's a normal, you got it made. But if it's something with an outlier or a couple outliers.
Well, okay, so give me the mean, the variance, the kurtosis coefficient, and the skewness coefficient.
Well, but you know, that doesn't necessarily work. I've got some nice examples where you can have a distribution with a beautiful skew, like an exponential distribution, or you can have a distribution that's a beautiful normal distribution with one extreme outlier, and they can have the same kurtosis and skew, but you do something very different with them when you're having to deal with them. You know, one you could just transform with a log, or the other you'd probably trim or Windsorize or something.
Hey, Dale, can you, if you have an actual example somewhere that's not too difficult to get a hold of, can you send that to me? Because part of what I'm looking at on my thesis is evaluating portfolios, taking into account the higher moments. And I'm doing some simulations of trying to use like a skewed key to produce actual return data and see for some optimized portfolio methods whether or not taking into account the higher moments matters.
Yeah.
So if you have an example like that, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I've got a little shtick I do on the importance of graphing stuff. Well, and part of that, too, is, you know, the Anscombe data with bivariate data is great, but even for univariate data, you know, you can have Well, if you get something with negative skew, for example, you apply a log transform, you really screw it up. So things like that are fun for students. Well, important for students to see, I think, how that works.
Would it be fun for me to see, too? I'm a student.
Well, we all are.
Okay, sorry for
interrupting. Like when we make it big with this paper and somehow find a way to make money off of it, we should give it to Michelle to invest for us. But there we go.
Oh, no, I don't do real things.
But that's right. It's mathematics, not finance.
Right.
Well, on distributional thinking, well, I come back to that issue with the starting point. I'm just suggesting without much, just saying that what currently is DT2, we could move to DT1 as kind of the starting point, that distributions are characterized by the shape center, by the shape center and spread of the distribution, and then talk about the the various points within that, maybe.
Sounds good.
So then DT2 comes first, distributions are characterized by their shape center and spread. Then what was DT1? Distributions are typically represented graphically?
Yeah, well, rather than typically represented, maybe something about the advantage of doing that. Graphical representations are useful to show the shape or something along those lines,
mm-hmm.
to reveal the shape of a distribution.
The graphical representation, comma, in particular histogram,
mm-hmm.
Reveal the shape of the distribution or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, they reveal more than just the shape. I mean, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's true. Although I would think the shape is really the key part of it. That is, if you just wanted the mean, you wouldn't have to bother with the distribution, with the plot.
Yeah, but if there's a few characteristics, I would, if I'm comparing two distributions and they have different shapes and different means, I'd rather see it graphically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's what we ask them to do. It's based purely on a graphical. Some of the ones we ask them to do is which class did better. We're actually asking them to compare the means, in a sense, just based on the graphical representation.
Yeah. Okay. Let's wordsmith a bit there.
It's something like it reveals all three and is essential for seeing the shape or something like that. But we might not need to say that. We could just think that.
Okay. Well,
should we say something like graphical representations provide, easy digesting of them? I'm not, the words are bad, but, quick. Visualization.
Our graphical representations, e.g. histograms, are useful for representing distributions. Maybe leave it that vague.
Yeah, but we don't want to say graphical representation is good for representing.
How about graphical displays are useful at representing distributions?
Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. And then let's see. So now that we can deal with normal distributions and outliers and maybe the comparison issue.
Okay.
So what do we want to say about the normal?
Well,
could you say the normal distribution is an important distribution in statistics or something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's enough.
Yeah, because why do we care so much about the normal is because not only is it a fairly common distribution for any given data set, but we really care about it because when they're trying to decide which sampling distribution, which graph could be the sampling distribution, we expect them to know that the shape becomes normal, so they have to recognize that.
Right, but that in itself should be and is listed in the sampling distribution section.
Right.
You need to know what the normal is.
Right.
Maybe, something like, I mean, the normal distribution is an idealized mathematical form. I don't know quite how to do that, but just say more what it is. You know, what is the normal distribution? Is a bell-shaped, but a key point there is that it's a mathematical, it's a theoretical distribution. I mean, the fact is we never have normal distributions, right?
Well, but I think that's going one step beyond. I think that's jumping ahead to talk about it in the context of a sampling distribution. I think in distributional thinking, we just want to define it as it is.
Right. I agree. I almost wonder if it's even just already taken care of when we mention shape. Because
the only thing I wonder about maybe adding is that the normal distribution is particular, the Clifton distribution, in that it's characterized entirely by its mean and standard deviation. You know, by its center and spread. As soon as you know that, you know exactly what it looks like, whereas a lot of the other distributions, that's not the case. Is that too technical?
I'm not sure I fully agree with that. I think there's a number of distributions that if you know the parameters, you know exactly what it looks like.
It doesn't set it apart, but it's an important characteristic of it, I suppose.
I mean, that being said, those are almost exactly the words I say in class. You know, the normal is completely characterized by its mean and standard deviation, and I show them the ugly PDF and say, don't worry, we'll never have to use this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
For those of you who have had calculus, you could take the integral, but you can't.
But you can't, unless you remember polar coordinates.
Well, but it is kind of fun to show the formula and then show what happens if you have a score at the mean or at the end or whatever. You kind of see how it works.
Oh, I just think it's a great thing to show on the day that students ask you too many questions and your self-esteem is challenged.
Right. I'll lay it out there and say, okay.
That's right.
And then they say, do we have to memorize this?
Yes.
Do memorize this? This PDF would be fine.
Well, okay, so the question is, what do we want them, what do they need to know about the normal distribution? You know, just in terms of distributional thinking. You know, that a special distribution or an important distribution in statistics is the normal distribution, or the normal distribution is especially important in statistical inference. Mm-hmm. Maybe getting ahead of ourselves.
Well, in statistics, we don't have to say an inference, but the normal distribution is particularly important or something.
Yeah.
But then I wonder whether, you know, like Michelle suggested, we want to say something about it.
Yeah, to define it a bit. Well, we want students to be able to, I suppose, recognize a distribution as being reasonably normal, approximately normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of the distributional thinking. You know, one of the sample questions is you lay out a distribution and ask people to characterize it, and one of the characterizations is that's correct, I think, is that's a reasonably normal distribution with an outlier. But what that implies is that students can recognize something as being reasonably normal.
Mm-hmm. And I know that it is a special case, but I still feel like it's, you know, when we talk in DT2 about characterizing shape, well, I guess that's what my students are going to look at. If they have to decide whether something looks normal, they're just going to look at the shape.
Key thing.
Right, and that's fine, because they, you know, as we stated, they can have different centers and different spreads.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe we focus on that and say the normal distribution is an important distribution in statistics. You know, the shape is a, you know, classical bell-shaped curve or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I think, getting at the essence of what we need to, the point we need to make here.
Yeah, the normal distribution is a bell-shaped distribution.
The normal distribution is an important distribution in statistics. The shape is a bell. The shape is a classical bell-shaped curve.
Uh-huh.
What language do people like there?
I don't know if you talk about the normal distribution being characterized by its classic bell shape or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
What was the name of the guy who wrote that book called The Bell Curve?
Yeah, there were two.
Remember?
I don't know.
I don't remember the name. The book is so famous, but it's embarrassing to say
I don't
know his name.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of The Black Swan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. But I think that kind of captured it. Did you get a note on that, Michael?
I have, the normal distribution is an important distribution in statistics. It is characterized by a classic bell-shaped curve.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's pretty close. That's pretty close to target, I think.
Any suggestions on improving?
Oh, I think especially for right now that's good.
Yeah, I think for now it's good. But that's nice. That sets us up now then to talk about outliers, you know, because we have that for kind of a reference.
Right. Okay, so what do we want to say about outliers? And then I would also ask whether we want to make outliers come before or after the normal distribution, because the normal distribution is really just a special distribution. Maybe that should be the last thing under distributional thinking.
Well, I'm thinking it might be the earlier, just so that one can characterize outliers relative to that. You know, the point that's way outside the distribution.
Well, I mean, okay, let's start with the question. What is an outlier?
Yeah.
I mean...
Me!
In only the good ways.
Yeah, that's why you have a graph. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, like, I don't like the definition of the box plots.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of arbitrary. Yeah.
It changes from software to software.
Some people, you know, have the one in, you know, the inner fence, the outer fence, the 1.5 interquartile ranges, 3, and then other software doesn't do that.
On that point, you know, if you compare how Excel and SPSS and most stat books define the 50th percentile, you get different answers.
Yeah.
The median, even? I know the quartiles they often define differently, different algorithms.
Yeah.
But the median they define differently?
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a strange thing.
Well, I'm not sure I use Excel as my benchmark, but even the others.
Yeah.
It's always so surprising.
Yeah, well, you know, you can make an argument for any of the different methods they use. But for
I guess n plus 1 over 2th ordered observation is what I've always seen, but I guess if you take the 0.5 times the number of observations, you know.
Yeah, there are different things. If you have tied scores, it gets more complicated.
Right.
But for outliers, you have the same kind of issue. One of my nice examples there is people like the rule of thumb. Well, if it's 3 standard deviations out, well, you can give people a distribution where there's a score 3 standard deviations out, and they say, okay, it's an outlier. But if you put 2 scores out there, it's no longer an outlier.
Right.
But if you look at the plot, it's obvious there are 2 outliers.
Well, but also the idea of, according to that, if you have 5 observations, you're unlikely to get outliers, but for the same distribution, you're going to get a whole bunch of outliers if you have a million observations.
That's a good point, too, about how you define it is really key. And maybe,
I mean, one of the things I always tell students that I don't think is well-grounded in the theory is I particularly look for, you know, breaks in the distribution.
Yeah, and it's points that will potentially...
What do you mean by a break in the distribution?
I'm looking for a density of 0 followed by a positive density.
Okay.
So, you know, if you have, you know, if you're measuring height and you have no one between 6'4" and 6'6", but somebody at 6'7", there's a, there's that break from 6'4" to 6'6". There's no one there, and then suddenly you see someone after that.
Okay.
Now, if you get something like an exponential distribution, you might get, you know, with a small data set, you might be getting gaps, and that might not be outliers. I mean, I would say it's outliers are things that you would not have expected from the given theoretical distribution. Right?
Well, what is the given theoretical distribution?
Well, okay, fair enough.
But you're getting at, I think, the point. Another point that maybe is relevant is the practical one, is that our concern with outliers is something that makes our results unstable, makes means and so forth, things that could affect our interpretations. We don't want our results to hinge on one point, for example.
Right.
Typically.
So do you want to put in here something about outliers being sort of a warning, the outliers must be cautious with outliers as they can affect the center, have strong effect on both the center and spread of a distribution, particularly in small samples or something along those lines?
That, I think, is getting at the point we want people to know. Why do we care about outliers? And it's just that.
Would an outlier be a point that has sort of a disproportionate influence on the center and spread of a distribution? You need to watch out for them. So I'm just trying to think why do we want to say something about outliers? Why is it important to look for that in distributional things?
I mean, I think both of your points are really good ones. I mean, I often frame it as Dale said, you know, we have to be concerned about this, you know, any one point or even a few points dictating the results of the conclusions of an analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it's also a flag for bias as well. You know, like, why is this point different than all the others? Is it a transcription error? Is it a lab error? You know, is it, you know, over time some chemical composition is decomposing and so it doesn't have the same effectiveness, you know, and so it's actually something systematic.
Or is it like a 6-minute period on Wall Street last Thursday?
Yeah, things like that.
Oh, gosh.
I make the point often that outliers are often the most interesting data point you have, you know, that you want to understand it. Why is that there? You don't just automatically throw it out.
Yeah. Have you guys heard the Post-it note story?
I don't think so.
Supposedly, no. My understanding is 3M was trying to make a very sticky chemical substance, and they, at the end of every day, the substance had been breaking down, and so what they found is they had a sticky substance, but they kept getting these consistent outliers. And when they investigated it, they realized that the compound was somehow breaking down. I don't get the whole chemistry of it, but it was breaking down by the end of the day, and it turned out that the substance was less sticky. And my understanding is this is how they created Post-it notes, by doing an outlier analysis. And not just throwing it out, but by saying, look, this is something important to look at. And I know in the field of business that this is a really hot topic, the idea of positive deviance. And they look for the outliers and try and identify why this company is outperforming all the others.
Yeah.
So there's some really nice examples of, you know, the good side of finding an outlier and thinking about it.
Yeah.
So what is an outlier?
Well, I mean, I think we defined it well, is that an outlier is one that you know, changes the results that you get.
But that would be true of the most extreme point and even of a nicely behaved data set. Maybe it won't change results.
Well,
it would change the mean standard deviation.
But maybe, but it also folds in the idea that if you have a very large data set, we have to be less concerned about outliers. And I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Still might be an interesting case, but it will have less impact. Well, so now that makes a point. If you have an outlier in a huge data set, is it still an outlier?
Depends how you defined it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it comes down to the important what impact it has. If it's in a big data set, like you're saying, it doesn't much matter for your effects, but it might be important for, say, business purposes. But if you do the usual definition in terms of, you know, like standard deviations out and so forth, it would still be defined as an outlier. It just wouldn't matter much. With 1,000 cases, you expect some out there.
Well, what I usually advocate is when you have a point that you suspect is an outlier, is do your analysis with and without and see whether or not your conclusions, you know, particularly your qualitative conclusions when you're writing things up, would really differ in any sort of considerable practical way, whether you include this point or you do not include this point.
Right. I think that's right.
Yeah. That's a good practical advice.
And then I think that if they do differ, that's when the headaches begin. Because then you have to look at, you know, why they differ.
Right. No, then you just throw it out so you get the result you want and you publish it.
Yeah. That's true. There you go. That's probably half the articles out there.
Yeah, there's a neat little cartoon that I saw. It's a guy plotting data, and it's like kind of a round blob of data points in a scattergram, and then there's an outlier, two outliers. One's way up on the top and on the right, and one's way down at the bottom at the right. And they're two different guys, two different theories, and they each erase one data point. Which one do they erase? They erase the one that doesn't go with their theory.
Right.
Yeah.
So to get back to what we were defining as outliers and their importance, Michael, what do you have written there so far?
I don't know. I mean, I just wrote, we need to be particularly sensitive to outliers. Outliers are points that have noticeable impact on means and standard deviations. I'm pretty not happy with it so far, but that's what I wrote.
It summarizes this conversation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How about notable experts, including the authors of this paper, were befuddled by the impact of an outlier? So we removed all four of us and we're left with no opinions.
That sort of captures it.
Or maybe we can just take Michelle's. We're all outliers in our own measures, right?
That's so. Right. We're all unique, just like everybody else.
We could just say C. Malcolm Gladwell, right? He wrote the book.
Right. I actually haven't read that one yet. I read Blink and Tipping Point, but is that why it's any good? Have you read it?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is good. My current kick is a book called Nurture Shock, which I highly recommend.
Nurture Shock?
Nurture Shock. It's a new thinking about children. Great scientific studies about psychological development of kids, and as all of us have kids, it's particularly insightful.
Oh, it's too late now. Mine are adolescents.
Well, it talks about the impact of sleep on adolescents. So.
Yeah, they don't get enough.
They don't get enough, and a lot of the disorders that have been diagnosed with people with sleep disorders are the same as the disorders that people diagnose with teenagers. And they actually look at interventions that have been done where they tried moving back the start time at six different school districts around the country, and all of them showed increased SAT scores and less behavioral problems and just phenomenal outcomes. So I can probably talk for about 2 hours on this book because I love it. But Nurture Shock by Pope Ronson and Ashley Merriman.
Who's it
about? Nurture Shock.
And the author?
Okay.
Poe. P.O. Bronson and Ashley Merriman.
Okay. Good tip.
So, yeah. All right. So, okay. Where were we with outliers?
Avoiding.
Yeah.
Can you read what you have one more time?
So, I wrote, we need to be particularly sensitive to outliers. Outliers are points that have noticeable impact on means and standard deviations.
That's getting at it.
I like the idea of pointing out they're not that they have impact, but they have. Yeah, I mean, I guess I said noticeable impact.
Yeah, maybe more something other than noticeable, but something.
Exert disproportional influence, or
How would we say that outliers by themselves influence? I mean, outliers unduly influence means and standard deviations.
That maybe unduly is good. Yeah, that's a subjective judgment about what makes it unduly, but that's getting at it. Because I think if we just say disproportionately, in a sense, the most extreme score in a distribution is disproportionate to others. But unduly.
I mean, if we were to take the wordsmithing out of this, can we summarize the points that we want to make?
That's a good thought. So one point is that they're important. Another is that they can give inaccurate results, interpretations, or they may change your interpretation single-handedly, and we don't like that.
Mm-hmm. So part of distributional thinking is just to have a heightened awareness keep an eye out for outliers as they influence, you know, the conclusions we draw about a distribution. In particular, can influence the mean and standard deviation or something like that. So that was not very articulate.
But that's getting at the point.
Can you say that again?
I was trying to say that the outliers can influence our interpretation of a distribution. They have the same. They can strongly influence the mean and standard deviation. But I'm trying to get at something like, you know, in somehow the real problem is that it can alter what our final interpretation or our qualitative interpretation of the results are, what we're trying to study. You know, like I use all the time, when I graduated, the year I graduated from Georgetown, Alonzo Mourning was in my graduating class. And so if Georgetown wanted to publish what the starting salary of their 1990 graduates was, well, his starting salary had a really strong influence on the average salary of Georgetown graduates that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice. I use the example of you're estimating the average household income in Claremont. Well, for a while, Snoop Dogg lived in Claremont. Okay, good sample of, you know, 25 people, and you know, boop, boop, and here's one out there at, you know, 5 million or whatever. and people get the point. Yeah. So how far down that road do we need to go? I mean, that's the kind of questions we might ask if we're trying to assess the understand the impact of outliers. And so the point is just that an outlier or outliers can unduly influence means and standard deviations, or do you want to say the inference one draws? Or the
is it okay to talk about inference at this point?
Maybe not. The interpretation or maybe, I think just they unduly influence the means and standard deviations. Getting at it?
Mm-hmm. I think you like the word unduly.
I do. Yeah. Right. Because, well, I was just sort of feeling that disproportionate, even though I, you know, it's right, but it doesn't rule out other cases that are smallest. But unduly is.
And it is rather subjective. I mean, you know, it is. They try different. As we were talking about before, you know, you try to quantify exactly defining an outlier, but in fact, it is rather subjective.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because the problem with unduly is it leaves that as a. But that, like you said, that's really the point. It is going to be a subjective judgment at the end, probably.
So we've got for distributional thinking now. We've got. That as number one, that the distribution is characterized by shape, center, and spread.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, can you read it back to us, Michael? Distribution
So number one, distributions are characterized by their shape, center, and spread. Number two, graphical displays are useful for representing distributions. And after graphical displays, I put parentheses, histograms, etc. I don't know if we want to change that, but for now. Number three, the normal distribution is an important distribution in statistics. It is characterized by a classic bell-shaped curve. And number four, we need to be particularly sensitive to outliers. Outliers unduly influence means and standard deviations and may lead to incorrect interpretations.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. It would be better than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the language, I don't like the word we in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But. Outliers.
Well, we could start off with the second sentence. Outliers unduly influence means and standard deviations and may lead to incorrect interpretations. Analysts or, you know, one must pay particular.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one doesn't even need that, maybe.
And therefore demand attention. I don't like the we either.
And we could change it to one should be particularly sensitive to outliers.
Or outliers are important.
I mean, what if we just said the second sentence, outliers unduly influence means and standard deviations and may lead to incorrect interpretations?
That's it?
Yeah.
That implies it's important.
Good.
And again,
that is why we need to be sensitive to it, but we don't need to say that we need to be sensitive to it. We're
right.
Saying that, yes, I agree. Good.
And it makes it shorter, and I like short.
Mm-hmm.
Concise. Great, we're done. Let's send it off to JSC and get it published.
Okay. You've got it all written up there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I have one other thing with distributional thinking.
Okay.
I know that we moved our original paper that we were looking at had something about distinguishing between, say, the distribution of a population and the distribution of a sample, et cetera. And I know that we moved that, let me look, up to SD1.
Okay.
Yeah. So
yep.
I guess my only question is, I know that this is a struggle for students, and I don't think it's necessarily related to sampling distributions or inference or anything like that, but understanding that sometimes when I use the word distribution, it's like a, you know, the binomial probability distribution, something like that. It's empirical. Sometimes, you know, even textbooks, they'll show sample data and they'll say, look at the distribution of heights or weights, whatever it might be. Is it worth it all in this section just saying something like, you know, some distributions are theoretical? But I guess I think we've had this discussion before that when we look at a histogram of data, that that's showing us, I guess, a part of what the theoretical population might be, something. I don't know. I just know that's something that my students always struggle with.
So you're talking about distinguishing between the theoretical distribution and the sampling distribution?
Well, I think that we do that in the sampling distribution section, but I know that, you know, I've seen problems like that. You know, here's some data, so it's not empirical, like binomial or whatever it may be. Here's some data. Tell me what you see in this distribution. I think that that word just gets thrown around a lot, and it has very different meanings.
Yeah, I think in the lit review, you write about that in the section on distribution.
Mm-hmm. And I know that we talked about it and we took care of it, and I'm very comfortable with that, SD1. Yeah. And so I think that's very specific to sampling distributions, talking about the distribution of the population being different from the distribution of sample statistic, and that should stay there. What I'm wondering is if any of you think it's important, distributional thinking alone, to make distinctions between, I guess, something that is more theoretical and something that is based on. I myself, when I look at sample data, I don't ask my students, I don't use the word distribution in that sense, but I know that others do. I'm just asking what you guys think.
Yes, I found it in the lit review here, where you talk about how it's a wild paper. Wild asserts that the most common usages of the word distribution fall into two classes: theoretical distributions, such as the normal, and empirical distribution, the distribution of observed data, which may cause further confusion for students who are unable to make this distinction. Or a little bit earlier, you talked about the difference between a probability model and a empirical data. Yeah, empirical data and probability models. So I see what you're saying.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of. This is a paper that he had found a lot of examples when the word distribution was attached to sample data, empirical data.
I think it commonly is, and we're surely doing it here. SD1 makes that point pretty explicit. Now, that distinction is really important. That's true.
I think you can find examples of distinguishing between the theoretical and empirical that aren't necessarily related to sampling distributions, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're just talking about distributional thinking.
So is that a concept relating to distributional thinking or relating to sampling?
Question.
Yeah, definition of a distribution. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about it, it's really a very, very different thing when we talk about the normal distribution, theoretical distribution versus mm-hmm. a normal distribution from a plot of data.
Which is like if you're thinking about the goodness of fit test. If you're trying to use some kind of probability model and you're trying to figure out is this a reasonable model to use based on the actual data that we have, you know, those two things, it's important to distinguish between, I'm using this theoretical distribution, here's the empirical one, how close are these? Is it reasonable to believe this could be part of this theoretical probability distribution?
I
think it's an important thing.
So what if we, in somewhere, either sampling or distributional theory, say that empirical distributions based on data are approximations of underlying theoretical distributions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, one problem with that is underlying theoretical. I mean, so you consider something like the average household income in the U.S. That distribution would be hard to specify as a theoretical distribution. It's really not normal or exponential or anything else. It's got lumps and bumps even, probably. But the underlying... But that's maybe not a fair one either, because that's we're talking about a population rather than a theoretical distribution. Samples, though, are approximations of the empirical population, which may not be a theoretical distribution at all. Right. I mean, there are times we say, well, assume it's reasonably normal. But we don't have to assume the population is normal. We're just assuming that the sampling is. But when we talk about distributional thinking again, do we want to say more about how people, about the comparisons, I mean, what we look for? We talked about how the shape can be represented by the graph. We talked about variance, I guess, earlier for spread. Center, I don't know if I need to say anything about that. That's part of what we want people to look at.
Can we go back just for a second and look at the sampling distribution one? That we did on the very first phone call. Because we've got SD0. I'm looking at the order here a little bit, and then we've also got a question mark one.
So the numbers that are there correspond to mm-hmm. the original numbers that Michelle had given.
Oh.
So
they're not the numbers that.
That's why they're
coming
out of order.
Okay.
And then the question marks are the ones that we've added.
Okay. And what we're suggesting is the new order would be the order that's actually here.
Yeah, the new order is the one that's actually listed here.
Okay.
But I tried to be able to allow us to map back to what Michelle had done in case we ever want to do that.
Perfect. I just didn't.
Yeah, okay. So the order given here is the order that we want to present it in.
Maybe what we should do in the next iteration of this is to renumber 1, 2, 3 in order that we think we should present them.
That's fine for me. I just didn't want to,
right, no,
since I had changed the titles, I didn't want to lose
yeah.
that mapping.
Okay, that's fine. I just didn't remember what the numbers were going to be. So the first point, I think, is very clear. Sample statistics is calculated from data collected in a sample. It's a random quantity. A population parameter is fixed and will not vary. Sample. Now, the population... To say the population is fixed and will not vary from sample to sample Yeah. Do we need to say one line varies from sample to sample, or should we just say the population parameter is a fixed value?
Which one are you on?
Yes.
I'm on the very first one, and I'm just reading through the order that you have them in here.
Yeah. Just a point.
So an SV question mark.
Yeah. The very first word could be a sample statistic rather than the sample statistic.
Yeah, so a sample statistic, which is calculated from data collected in sample, is a random quantity and varies from sample to sample, whereas a population parameter is fixed, is a fixed value.
Okay.
I mean, I think what we should do we're getting to about an hour past our time. Maybe what we can do is take all of these and each of us can suggest some rewording.
Okay, great.
So we're loaded for next time when we meet. So maybe, Mike, if you type up what we have now and just we'll renumber them in order that we think they should be presented, and then we'll all have that to work from, and then we'll all work on, for next time we talk to see what editing we think.
And, in fact, what I'll do before our next call as well is go back with the new order that we have and just redo the table that I had made last time with our assessment questions across the top and try to match them up again so that we can talk about that as well for the next time.
Right, and we'll see where the gaps are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. Well, when do we want to talk
about... I think we had asked a question last time, and I'm not sure where people stand on this, about whether we want to include something like that in this paper or just this whole idea of creating this table is sufficient for paper number one, and then paper number two looks at the assessment item. So we don't even talk about the assessment item in this first paper.
That would get us the paper out faster if we could actually get it out.
Because I'm very concerned, and I know this is going to happen, is that we're going to look at the table and we're going to say we're missing some real big assessment items. And the process of getting those will be long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good suggestion. That this table, as we're putting it together, is, I think, looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, I think if we put the frame of, different people have looked at these different concepts, but they haven't really been brought together and examined for overlap. I think that's a nice contribution. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I think so.
And it clearly leads us on our path of saying, and therefore the next thing is to develop an assessment item that looks at each of these non-overlapping sets, et cetera.
Okay.
Well, we're getting close on time here. So what is your thought about next call? Is next week same? Time a good time, or I can do any time next week. Michelle.
So what's going to happen between now and then? Are we just going to look at this table and all kind of try and refine it?
Well,
yes. Try to get a final version.
Yeah, to try to finalize the version of the table. And to think if there's anything else that ought to be included.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is go back and read the list. Review with this new table and see, is there anything that's in the lit review for these concepts that we don't have anywhere in this table, and vice versa.
That's great. I think that would be great. Do we all want to look at it and suggest some changes to the wording? And if you want to send them to me enough before the meeting, I can kind of consolidate them together?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, but you'll send a draft out. First, I mean,
I'll send a draft out now.
Right, great.
Okay.
But as people have updates, I can make those changes.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Yep.
And does next week work for people?
Next week this time is good for me.
Yep.
Is on the hour start good, or is the 15 minutes after the hour good?
On the hour works for
me. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, you're the one who has to stay up late here, so if you want to move it earlier or any other time, let us know.
Well, if we can do on the hour, that's great. If we can do 10 to 11, that's great, but 15 minutes doesn't make a big deal if somebody's got something until...
Yeah, no, well, this week I just had a meeting that I really couldn't get out.
Can you do on the hour?
I sure can.
So 1 p.m. West Coast time?
Could we have it any day but Monday? Sorry, I just looked at my calendar. My parents are going to be here still on Monday.
Okay. Well, pick a time.
Yes.
I can do Wednesday.
Tuesday, Wednesday?
What's the date, Wednesday?
Monday the 17th. Wednesday is the 19th.
Okay. I can do that.
So we're talking about Wednesday?
Yep.
Wednesday on the hour, so 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern.
Yep.
3 Central. What is it, 10?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's good. Well, I'll also set up the call and see if we get this recording posted. And unless you hear otherwise, we'll send it for that.
Okay, and then we'll send, Michael send us out the update and we make each of us kind of think about it, look at the wording, and we'll send it back to him with suggestions.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. If you guys want to get it to me by around, you know, Tuesday morning or something, that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, well, perfect.
I think that was another meeting. We've got a good looking table here.
Sounds good.
All right.
So, talk to you all next Wednesday then.
Yep. Have a great week, everybody.
You too.
You too.
Okay.
Likewise. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.